are listening to Conversations with Nathan Latka, where I sit down and interview the top SaaS founders, like Eric Yuan from Zoom. If you'd like to subscribe, go to getlatka.com. We've published thousands of these interviews, and if you want to sort through them quickly by revenue or churn, CAC, valuation, or other metrics, the easiest way to do that is to go to getlatka.com and use our filtering tool. It's like a big Excel sheet for all of these podcast interviews. Check it out right now at getlatka.com. Guys, David in 2008, 9, 10, 11 was the height of actually his poker career. Won the world's poker in 2008, which was great. Used that money, said, okay, I'm going to go to business school. Sharp went up here, then launched a company called Bloom Nation in 2012. Stayed there until about 2020. You know, they raised a bunch of money. There were three founders. You know, they got really diluted. The three founders owned about, caught under 50% of the company when he left, and ultimately launched Whippy AI, which is now helping folks like doctor's offices, right, do better marketing, also use the platform for operational experience. He's currently got about 600 customers, paying an average $600 a month, but Clear Enterprise Motion built in here. He already has customers that are paying more than $100,000 per year. He's hoping to expand in that market and drive revenue growth this year in 2024 of over 75%. They're at about 4 million run rate today, up from 2 million a year ago and about a million before that. So good growth, all bootstrapped, which we love. Hey folks, my guest today is David Daneshkar. He's a former WSOP champ, co-founder of Bloom Nation, and today co-founder of Whippy. David, you ready to take us to the top?
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I did not know you played poker. What year did you play?
Yeah, I was a professional poker player between 2005 and 2008. And then in 2006, I was ranked top five. In 2008, I won the World Series of Poker. So it was super fun.
How much is skill and how much is luck?
I think it's like classic, like everything else. The short term, it's a lot more skill dominated. It's hard to see the variance. But short term is more skill based, luck based. Sorry. Today's been a long day. But long term, yeah, skill based. Like to see a poker player win millions over a long term, over a certain long number of hands, is definitely very skill based. And it was a fun time, actually.
That's great. All right. So let's get into Whippy. Maybe tell us what the product does, maybe through the eyes of a customer that uses you today.
Yeah, so it's being used, basically, a lot of businesses are looking for AI and automation, and I call it functional. They're using like CRMs that are not the most savvy. So they have basically these databases and they can't run automation. So we'll integrate and be able to run automations, text automations, voice automations, email automations, workflow automations, basically. But we started with text, recently added email, now adding voice AI. An example could be like a staffing company, where an applicant comes on Indeed and they need to qualify them and ask questions, but a person can't get them right away. And before they apply to 100 other staffing companies, the text, email, and voice will come in to collect all that information and add it to their database. So that would be a good example of how Whippy works.
And so are you working specifically with, like, I see Body Prof, chiropractic, are these physical office dentists, things like that?
Yeah, most of them, at least in the early end, are, you would think of it as like lawyers, dentists, pharmacies, insurance companies. You're correct. Like the old school world meets new school technology.
And what got you into this? I mean, did you in between poker hands run a legal practice or a dentist shop or something?
No. But I think the one experience I had is after poker and before this, we started a company. This one we bootstrapped, but the last one we raised about $20 million from Andreessen, Spark, Ronnie Conway, a bunch of people, and it was helping local florists. So I think there, when I looked at how they communicate and how they can be more efficient, retention, stuff like that, I noticed just things were really manual. And our first foray was in text messaging, because just that's where you get to leads quicker. That's where you get action quicker. That was like the lowest hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And I guess close out the Bloom Nation story before we dive deeper into Whippy. So how much did you raise there, and what was the end story there? What happened?
Yeah, so we raised about $20 million. I actually departed. I was a co-founder and CRO, and I think just decided after 6 or 7 years wanted to start something else. So I left. Both my co-founders are there. I think they raised around after I left. So yeah, it's still there, still intact. I believe it's about 100 people, employees when I last checked. But I think the one thing for me is I wanted to build something a little bit differently, bootstrapped. There was two things I wanted to do: not raise money so I could decide my own fate and how I wanted to do stuff. And secondly, the addressable market size. I think we were really specialized into florists. And I think Bloom Nation, as I was leaving or after, was trying to get in other industries, but that was difficult. I think here we started with something super broad, like communication, and then we narrowly defined the use case, which was challenging in itself to start, but I think allows it to scale easier without like hitting roofs or hitting a small industry. But yeah, the company's still there and excited to see them continue to grow.
I'm not asking you to throw the VC investors under the bus, but I do think that founders, you know, VC money is, I think, the best marketed money in the world. And for every one that raises, there's 1,000 that are profitable, happily bootstrapping at 5 million run rate. You have the foresight, or, you know, just the sight in general, to basically have both, you've seen both worlds. What advice would you give to someone today looking at raising versus not?
I think the best thing I've ever heard someone say is optionality. So it's like, if you don't raise, you have the option. You can do it on your terms. You don't look needy. So I compare it a lot to going to a bar and talking. You don't need to meet anyone. And generally things come to you. Like right now, I think I've had 3 or 4 emails in the last day just on family offices, private, like just looking. And when you don't need it, they want you more. I think that's part of it. I think the second thing is just, I think you make poor decisions. I don't want to throw them under the bus, as you said, but when someone starts a company, if someone gives them $5 million, I think they make poor decisions. If the only way to hire people is through customers paying you on contracts, that means you have to actually build something that people want. You have to get a credit card and they have to pay you. So it's much more difficult to start. But I think once you get to like the 3 to 5 million ARR and you scale, you build product better, you make better decisions. You're much more culpable, like even on sales and acquisition. You look at payback and you look at things that matter. You look at your P&L a lot. You actually act like someone like your dad, how he ran a business, right? But actually with new age technology. And if you can do the both and scale and get past that chasm, I think it's just lights off. I mean, you can do whatever you want.
Well, yeah, and forgive me for putting you on the spot and doing this analysis live. I'm going to make some sweeping generalizations here so the audience can learn with us. I mean, 3 co-founders, right? Let's assume, you know, 2010, you founded it. Let's assume, just for the sake of argument, you split it into 3 each, which maybe you didn't, but let's say you did. And then you do the seed, series A, maybe a pre-seed. I mean, pre-seed is 20% dilution. Series A is
Tell me the details.
What happens is you freaking burn out, and that's what happened to you. 6, 7 years. I want to go start something new.
Yeah, the 3 of us, when I left, I mean, cumulatively own less than half. Mm-hmm. And I think what it was is, I can just tell you kind of the path without getting too much details. Like the first thing we did is, as we were raising money, we went to Mucker Labs, which is like, I don't know if you've heard of Mucker, but it's similar to it's a local incubator that's done well, actually. Like they had Service Titan, Honey, et cetera, come out of there. So they've done quite well, the owners there. But like there was a small percentage we gave for base capital, just the incubator world. Then we raised a seed, series A, and I don't know if I would call it A+ or B as well. So you're right. Like at the end of the day, just the process is daunting. Like at that point, the CEO has to spend a crazy amount of time. I think just the hardest part is actually decision making. Like if you want to change your path, like if you don't grow, you don't get money. Like I hate to say it, but it's like someone who has the carrot, so to speak. And I think at this point we can scale how we want to. And we don't have to worry about like, oh, if we don't have certain growth metrics or stuff like that, oh no, we can't get capital. If we don't have capital, we can't sustain our burn rate. So I think, but that was our path. It was, like you said, getting chopped. I think there are paths for that. I think what I'm just learning, if I was to give advice to your audience, is we don't realize that we can do it without it when our backs are against the wall. Like if you're creating like hardcore, like AI hardware, or I don't know, certain stuff, you may need it. But I think for the majority of software companies, if they act a little frugal and a little bit of difficulty in the beginning, they're better off long-term. Mm-hmm. And then there's things that I learned even now that I'm like shooting myself for. Like by bootstrapping the company, I'm sure you know about like things like the 83B election, or where you can get a certain amount back. Like by bootstrapping it, you can get 10x what is that price when you do go to like a C corp. So there are things I'm learning that are other advantages for being a bootstrap company. I think just most importantly, you don't have to waste that time, and they come to you. So that's kind of been my realization. It's harder to start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How much of those initial, the Mucker Labs, then the seed, how much of that was you guys, I mean, maybe you look back and say, you know, it would have taken us longer, but we could have done it bootstrap. But a lot of, in my opinion, raising money, the reason, especially first-time founders do it, is it's actually just, it makes them feel better. It makes them feel like they're doing the right thing if they can convince people to give them money. And then they sometimes stick in a bad idea for too much time.
Yeah. So I think the main reason we did it the Cardinals sin there is none of the three founders were technical, which, by the way, like 10 years ago when I came out of the University of Chicago and we started out of there, and like Grubhub or Etsy were just starting and you're building a marketplace business, there weren't as many no code and API tools as there are now. So it's harder to start. So you had agencies, you had, so I think there was maybe some reason for that. But I think if we were starting that now, there's probably no reason with all the tools. Also, my co-founder now at this company was someone that worked at my last company and is highly technical. So the skills are completely different. So I think that was part of the reason why we raised the capital. And I think you're right. Like the last thing, and I can see you smiling, but the last thing is I think it was just more like that's what we were told or that's what we saw was sexy. Yeah. And I think now, again, I don't want to throw them under the bus because there are definitely reasons why. But I think there are better reasons to try to figure that out with contracts, with P&L, like doing it that way. Because I think when you finally unlock something real and you really need to scale and capital is at your disposal, you're giving less dilution. Everything is really clear in terms of how you're going to scale that. And money really is the necessary fuel. And it might not be at that point either.
Yeah. I mean, all disclosure, I mean, you're not buying 100 wind turbines you have to go install to start helping florists run their companies better. So it's not like it's capital intensive. I don't think so, unless something I don't know about, capital intensive at the start. But look, lessons learned makes a lot of sense. I guess, what year did you leave? Was it 2016?
No. I was, so my kind of path, I'll just give you my path in a nutshell. It was like 2008, I won the World Series of Poker. 2010 to 12, I went to the University of Chicago for my MBA. And then we started it in 2013. I left in right during COVID. So I'd been there, by the way. The company's been there. Company's actually been there for now for like 10 years. But I left in 2020, 2019, 2020, and started this kind of in the midst of COVID and when we started, it wasn't exactly this idea. Myself and my partner were testing different ideas, but I think this really took hold at the end of 2020, 2021.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, so going back into Hello Whippy today, describe to me how you guys charge, right? So what's the average customer pay you per month or per year?
Yeah, sure. So my email is that the company is now kind of gone to Whippy. So it's Whippy, the domain is whippy.ai. I would say right now we're moving more up market. So average MRR for a customer probably is around $600 a month. So seven, anywhere between 5 and 10K ARR. So I'd call that SMB. But we are starting to have customers that are north of six figures ARR. So basically moving up more enterprise up market.
What's enabled you to land that deal? So some you do have customers paying you more than $100,000 per year because you've got them paying for what? API calls? What's the utility based?
Not API costs, but what happens is so the SMB, it's like, why should you use our platform over another texting or automation platform? For them, it's developer costs. So like if they were to build off Twilio, they would have to build a communication plan off Twilio, build certain features, certain sets. And like, then it becomes like, and the developers, even a team of 10 at a big company couldn't really build this and get this off. So if they have a specific pain point, that's where I think our API comes in. And then we also happen to be integrated to all the different, what's called aggregators. So like we can increase deliverability to a certain degree. So when you put those two together in your large company, it's just not worth, it's better to buy than build, I would say.
That makes sense. And you started onboarding customers in what year? How'd you get your first customer?
Yeah. So the actual real first customers, and I don't know if they have the best use case for people, but it was just my old customers. So Flourish were some of the first. You look at retention. Retention wasn't great. And I think the reason we realized is they were using it just for marketing. We saw high retention in people that use this for operations. Like if the platform came down, we'd get messages within 1 minute. Like I can't communicate with customers. Mm-hmm. So I think that started to happen about two and a half years ago. And the hardest part was just finding the use case. It was depressing. Like I come from a sales background, so making cold calls, walking into people. But eventually I think it was a couple cold emails and sequences, getting databases, sending out sequences, looking at open rates, getting on demos, and then honestly just customizing the software a little bit for that use case. That helped a lot. And then when you do that,
but how do you even know which data? You had to do something to say, I want to go get a database of lawyers or a database of whatever.
Oh, yeah. I looked at competitors. Got it. So rather than go to actual industries, I went to use case. I went to someone who uses this software. I'd pull that from like Built With or just different databases, put them into, I think we use Apollo now, but I think then it was like Outreach. So Apollo sequences, look at open rates, adjust subject lines to see, you know, like the hustle type stuff.
Tell me what you searched and built with to get a result of all the sites that JavaScript was it was installed on. Just give me the name. Come on.
No, I think that the thing is for anyone here, like Builtwit's a great tool, and other tools like Apollo. Like there's also right now like a lot of intent based tools, right? Like you could look up intent for SMS communication, but for Builtwit, I mean, I just go find a competitor's name. I'd find a competitor. Well, I think yeah. So I'll give you one example because I think 2 years ago, example would be Zipwhip. Zipwhip was bought by Twilio and went out of business. Okay. So there was a feast for all the customers, and like we just started this, so I was able to pull a list from Zipwhip and then feed that to someone on Upwork to like get deeper into the data because I didn't have Apollo back then, and then just like blast them. And
so
then
you gave that list to Upwork to get emails attached to all the customers.
Yeah, I think now obviously Apollo and stuff, but I had them do the hardcore way. I went on Upwork and had them even fill out their web forms, right?
Oh, got it. I see.
Anything. No, everything. I would text their landline number, go on their web forms, put them in email sequences, and the Upwork person would use their own tactics, I would say. But now I think they're probably...
What title were you targeting? Was it like the CRO?
Well, at the point in time, because they were smaller, remember I started with like 5K, it wasn't difficult. Like if you're going after a lawyer, whatever, if you're going after a staffing person, it was operations. If you're going after a lawyer, you're a managing partner. So I'd kind of... Yeah, I mean, but most of those companies weren't like, they were like 10 to 50.
10 to 50 employees?
In the beginning, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, and then fast forward to today, how many customers are you working with?
I think we're getting close to 1,000. So probably right now in the neighborhood of 600 to 700. So you can do the math on the ARR, but somewhere between 3 to 4. About 2x what it was a year ago.
That's where you're at today. 600 customers at $600 a month is what? 7. What does that put you at? 3.6?
Yeah, somewhere between 3 and 4 right now would be ours as well.
Bootstrapped, right? I mean, this is you're in such more of a powerful position today than you were 2 years in at Bloom Nation.
I think they're both different experiences because I think it's I've gone and spoke on both of them. Probably was a better place for me to learn there on someone else's dime, to be honest with you. So mm-hmm. that was also not a bad, time as well. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to do the math, but I think you make a good point. Like, if you were to do a venture-backed company and you raise and you have, you know, multiple founders and multiple, like your cap table is this big, right?
Yeah.
You're like, at the end, when these companies exit, you don't realize, but I think the math thing is really a good one. It's like, they exit like 5 or 10% of, let's even say like a $300 million exit. Like that's not actually huge. Whereas if you're getting a $60, $70 million exit, which seems like that's much more attainable, or 100 with private equity and all these buyers, and you have 50%, that's a lot more. So
you're a poker player. Would you agree with the statement that if you want to, in the least risk way possible, build $5 million of personal net worth, you should bootstrap?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I have my own net wealth calculator that I put now. Ever since I started this, like I put my stocks, I put this just so I understand. I think well, I mean, so. And I think
you were pretty wealthy early. I mean, I think in 08, that prize was 625K. And in, I think 2011, what did you earn? Like 2.4 million on poker back. How old were you then? 2011?
Yeah. So I think I was basically when I was at the height of poker, I was in my 20s and I did have a 7-figure bank account from poker. So that was really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you don't go, you know, spend it on the yachts and all the crazy stuff, it's great.
Yeah, but I think to answer your question, like, I think the answer is yes. I think the harder part is you shouldn't fool yourself. So I think the hardest part, that's why the bootstrap idea I like, because it's the truth quick, right? It's truth serum. Mm-hmm. The mistake I think most people make, and I was telling this to someone yesterday, is it's like, how do you price and find product market fit? If you go to someone and you ask, hey, would you use this? 99% of them are not going to offend you. They're going to say yes. I mean, who's not going to tell you that at a dinner if they're your friends or something? But then if you go to someone, you're like, okay, I built this at the end of the call. Okay, cool. Like, here's the Stripe link. It's 6,000. Do you want to put in your credit card? Like, the truth really hurts, or you see that. And so I think with a bootstrap thing, the other thing is you just don't have a lot of time to waste. You have to get to the truth quick because your cash flow, your cash statement is the ultimate sayer of if you exist or not.
Nailed it. Talk to me as we wrap up here quickly about growth. If you're at about 4 million runway today, where were, or sorry, revenue today, where were you about a year ago?
It was about half. So we doubled in the last 12 months. I think kind of on our roadmap is probably, I would say, think about 70 to 75% this year and maybe 50 the next, but you know, within the next 24 months, definitely we want to be at 10 million in ARR bootstrapped as well. So
And so I guess you broke the 1 million run rate in 2022.
yeah.
That makes sense. Real quick, how do you drive 75%? People say you can't bootstrap and also drive crazy good growth. How are you going to drive 75% growth without raising capital?
I think that's a good question because in December I'd present this to the company. I think it's just different channels. So here's my first question for most people listening, but it's like, what is the channel that people use? Let's just call it for B2B sales. We started with outbound, which is different from a lot of people. Like we started because of Bloom Nation, again, a blessing of Bloom Nation, like cold calling, cold emailing, like true SDR, and I was the AE. I think now we're starting to see inbound, but I think with our API, like partnerships, trade shows, outside sales, like inbound, like those channels that most people rely on in the beginning are things that we haven't even tapped yet. So I think partnerships will be a big thing because as we go to different systems and we have mutual customers and they're missing stuff in their system, right? If you're a accounting a CRM and you don't have this, this, and this, you can now use our API. You push people to us. There could be like an affiliate rev share there. That and white labeling, stuff like that, I think would be a big part of the growth of the next 24 months.
All right, good stuff here. Let's wrap up, David, with the famous five. Number one, your favorite book.
My favorite book. Well, I think I'll just say the Shoe Dog one. Nike is actually a solid book.
Number two, is there a CEO you're following or studying?
I think I'm always, for better or for worse, looking at what Elon says. I think it's pretty amazing what he's done.
Number three, what's your favorite online tool for building Wippy besides your own?
My favorite online tool. Well, yesterday, for example, I haven't done inbound. So yesterday we just started looking at SEMrush, which was pretty insightful.
Yep. Shameless plug. We'll have Eugene, the president of SEMrush, speaking at SAS Open on March 28th. If you guys want to meet him in person. Number four, David, how many hours of sleep do you get every night?
When we started this, like 4 to 5, but I think now it's more 6 to 7.
All right. And what's your situation? Married, single, kids?
Single, and my parents are worried.
That's amazing. They shouldn't be worried. That's great. And how old are you?
40.
40. Last question. Something you wish you knew back when you were 20 years old.
I think my biggest thing that I think about a lot is probably just spending more time learning about real estate. And I think recently, more and more recently, spending more and more time with my family.
With your family?
Parents, my brother, he just had a niece. I just had a niece, sorry, he has a daughter. So just in general, with the people that are more important to you, I would say.
Makes sense. Guys, David in 2008, 9, 10, 11 was the height of actually his poker career. Won the
Yeah.
World's Poker in 2008, which was great. Used that money, said, okay, I'm gonna go to business school. Sharp went up here, then launched a company called Bloom Nation in 2012. Stayed there until about 2020. You know, they raised a bunch of money. There were three founders. You know, they got really diluted. The three founders owned about caught under 50% of the company when he left, and ultimately launched Wippy AI, which is now helping folks like doctors' offices, right, do better marketing and also use the platform for operational experience. He's currently got about 600 customers, paying an average $600 a month, but clear enterprise motion built in here. He already has customers that are paying more than $100,000 per year. He's hoping to expand in that market and drive revenue growth this year in 2024 of over 75%. They're at about 4 million run rate today, up from 2 million a year ago and about a million before that. So good growth, all bootstrapped, which we love. Check it out at whippy.ai. David, thanks for taking us to the top.
Awesome. Thanks for your time. Appreciate it.